Fat Roger. Roger breathed softly and stared up into space. His normally flitting eyes were glassy and rigid and rolled up into the top of his eyelids. Dried tears carved soft red ruts into his cheeks. Strong pheromones drifted away from him into the night air. From his vantage point behind the brick wall separating the city park from the school grounds, the chemistry was wasted. The place was deserted, and the little fat boy sat quietly. Roger was fat. He had always been fat. Pudgy, fatso, blubber boy.
Come on, whale tail. Run, fatso, or are you too fat? Fatty, fatty, fatty.
The lilting sing-song voices mingled with memories in the night air. All he'd wanted to do was talk to her. If they hadn't been around, she might have walked home with him. She was no raving beauty herself by junior high standards, but he liked her. He thought she liked him.
I don't think you're fat, she once said. Some people just have big bones. I got big bones.
It was nearly the same thing his own mother had said to him. What was wrong with being fat? Why did all the other kids tease him so? Why couldn't they just leave him alone? They had so many friends. It seemed pointless to waste time on such an insignificant, friendless person. His thoughts covered the same territory night after lonely, scary night. Jim was the worst. Mr. Krushak never saw anything happen. Popular kids, athletic kids, always got away with everything. They tripped him, pushed him down, stole his clothes, and made fun of his less-than-developed manhood. He couldn't skip the class. That meant suspension. He didn't dare tell the teacher. Nothing ever happened as a result, except a more brutal retribution the next time, and there was always a next time. It was an ever-downward spiral. The teachers shook their fingers and went for more coffee. When they left, the bullies remained. In Roger's world, bullies were a fact of life. There was no way he could possibly fathom the whys and wherefores of such black-hearted children. He knew it was simply the way it was. The strong picked on the weak, and the strong always commanded the larger number. Roger never volunteered in class. Answering questions opened the possibility of being wrong. A correct answer was lost in the sea of conformity, yet a wrong answer absolutely demanded attention. It was fortunate for Roger that no matter what, he was very likely to progress from grade to grade, whether he demonstrated any learning or not. Compulsory education provided a shelter for poor achievers. Low expectations provided a chameleon camouflage for a child who wished to remain hidden. Hide. It was the only thing he could do. Band, dropped. Photo club, dropped. Drama club, dropped. Lunch in the cafeteria, missed. There had been no friends to speak of since leaving grade school, when childhood became more organized. He had to hold his pee all day. It was too dangerous to use the restrooms. There was only one way in and one way out. Each activity guaranteed that he would get caught in the open again, be vulnerable again. Junior high had cost him everything. Roger often attended the home basketball games, but he never sat in the bleachers. He was marginally safe if he hung around the edge of the event. As long as he stayed attentive, he could avoid the troublemakers and steal an occasional glance at her. But tonight's game had been the final straw. They said they had a knife. If they caught him alone, they'd cut his balls off, they said. Roger avoided them. Keeping an ever-watchful eye, he tried to track their movements in the crowded gymnasium, but there was so much commotion, so many people, and it was so dark outside. If only he could just see her, even if only from a distance, it would be worth the risk of being out in the open. At length, he saw her in the crowd, sitting in the bleachers with her two friends. Roger stood off to the side and waited for her to look in his direction, with any luck, before the boys found him. She glanced his way, and they made eye contact. Both smiled. It was worth the risk. He liked her. She pointed toward the hallway leading to the concession stand. He nodded his head, and they both started to move toward the same spot. Each step brought them closer together and farther from the roar of the crowd.
Hi,
she said.
Hi, he said. What you doing?
Sweeping his foot back and forth, Roger stared at the floor.
Nothing. Want to get a Coke or something?
Roger couldn't answer, for the boys had come into the hallway, and he froze. They were playing catch with a pocket knife, passing it back and forth between them like a ball. What was there to do? If he ran, he was a coward. If he got beat up, he was a weakling. Either way, she would never speak to him again. He felt lost and looked around for the seldom present adult help. Roger's heart raced and his bladder spasmed. She saw the expanding pool of urine at his right foot. She covered her mouth and fled back to the safety of the shouting crowd, wiping her tears as she ran. They circled Roger and blocked his path as he, too, tried to run.
"Hey, Bebo, look at the sissy. Pissed his pants. Ooh, is the little fatty scared? Roger pissed his pants. Roger pissed his pants."
In unison, they sang and jeered and jabbed and shoved. From behind, the biggest boy slammed Roger to the ground, and the smaller boys each took turns pushing his face into the warm pool.
"Push away if you want more. Push away if you want more."
They all had their hands on him.
"Hey,"
an adult shouted.
"What are you boys doing?"
They released their hold.
"Nothing,"
a large boy claimed.
"We was just horsing around."
In the momentary confusion, Roger bolted for the hallway exit and fell into the dirt just outside the door. The others did not follow, troubled with having to make up a story and promising to behave better next time. Nothing more would happen to them. Nothing ever did. Roger picked himself up from the dirt and ran away from the building, any direction away from the light. Nearly blinded by a flood of tears, he made it more than 4 blocks before collapsing behind high shrubbery at a nearby church. He lay face down in the dirt weeping. It was the last step, the final humiliation. She saw him piss his pants. She saw him cower in front of the other boys. She saw him not fight back. She saw it all. He could no longer go anywhere or see anybody. He had to stay out of sight for the rest of his life. Roger's parents finally notified the police around midnight. There were no friends to call, no parents to check with, but they made a few phone calls anyway.
"No, didn't see him. I don't hang around with him." "Roger who?"
The responses were all very similar, very unuseful. No one called her parents. There was no reason to suspect she even knew him anyway. The police would find him wandering sooner or later. He was always a loner. It even occurred to his parents that Roger might be hiding in his own house somewhere. They'd sort it out in the morning. Roger watched the crescent moon come up. His soaked pants chilled him in the night air, and he curled in a fetal position and whimpered and cried until dawn. Throughout the day he wept and dozed, but the shrubbery held his secret. By evening his parents were finally sure something was very wrong. He had not shown up at school, and he wasn't in the house or any of his usual hiding places. Although they were concerned, there was little to do but wait for Roger to come home, or for the police to call. The pissed pants story had made it around the whole school by late morning. The boys were irritated that they couldn't find Roger so they could continue the torment. The rumor was that he ran away and jumped from a bridge and drowned in the Movistar just north of the city. His parents' phone rang throughout the day with prank calls made from the payphone outside of the school cafeteria. The teachers barely noticed his absence. Usually they barely noticed his presence. By evening he was all cried out. Roger watched as the sun began to set and cast long golden shadows across the churchyard. He had remained hidden for nearly a whole day. Normally hungry, he began to realize that something subtle had changed in him. No desire for candy or chips occupied his mind. He felt strangely different. He could no longer feel his heartbeat or his fingertips. Staring at his hands, he stroked the tips of his fingers on the rough, hard dirt. Nothing. Just a soft tingle as if his arm was asleep. But he felt the tingle all over, from his face to his butt. And inside, too. It was that inside tingle that was the most marvelous. He felt so light, so limber, so lithe. He'd been thinking about his parents throughout the day, wondering how upset they were, what his punishment would be, and how long they would remind him about this latest little difficulty. That's what they always called it, a difficulty. But right now that all seemed alien and distant, like someone else's troubles, someone else's difficulties. Yes, things would be different now. He wasn't sure exactly, but he felt like maybe he had slipped outside the world now, outside, looking in. Maybe everyone would leave him alone out here. Maybe he would never have to go back in again. Maybe. He heard voices as evening strollers passed on the walk 20 feet away, but he paid them no mind. It seemed no longer important to stay hidden. They were unimportant anyway. They were inside and couldn't hurt him. No one could hurt him now, not here on the outside. In the twilight, Roger discovered armor hanging in the bushes. It must have been hanging there all along, just waiting for him to take it and put it on. He couldn't imagine how he had missed it. It weighed nothing and rendered him invisible. Its warm carapace surrounded him and protected him and gave him strength. It was wonderful. Roger leaned back against the building's foundation and wept again, the tears streaming down his filthy cheeks and around his smiling mouth. Tears of joy. They were so very good, and he hadn't felt good in such a long time. As the last of the twilight disappeared, he stood and stretched his aching little body. From his new vantage point outside of the world, no one could see him or hear him. They were all inside. He could walk in peace out here. He had reached back in time and plucked himself out of the world at his own beginning. Roger was way outside. He had waited long enough. The world had moved on, and he was no longer a part of it. His armor had submerged just below skin level and had become one with him. He felt its strength and knew the secret defense would sustain him. No one would chase Fatso. No one would poke at Dumpy. The boys would leave him alone now. He cut through the familiar backyards on his way back to where he knew he needed to be. A glint of porch light reflected off it. A sword to match his armor was lying there in the tall grass, cast off by a previous warrior. It was beautiful. He picked it up and studied it closely, turning it over and over in his hand. The metal gleamed and the hilt fit his hand like a glove. Swinging it about, he felt an instant mastery of the powerful weapon. Roger moved on in perfect invisibility, cutting through the yards and down the darkened side streets, gliding and sliding, moving with pride and precision. Now dragons lay bleeding in his wake. Defeated black knights lay beside the corpses of their devil steeds, dying eyes showing first fear. Demons, devils, and monsters of all description jumped out of the darkness, and he deftly felled them one by one. So many evils to dispatch. He thrust and he parried and whirled about as he pushed on. Exhausted but euphoric, Roger backed up to a low brick wall and slid down until he was seated in the dirt. His eyes rolled up as if he were looking through the top of his skull. Soft, steady breath moved in and out for more than an hour, and he didn't move a single muscle as he drifted in the small-town quietness of night. Frozen like a statue, his ears were closely tuned to the only sounds that mattered now. They started a long way off and built slowly, slowly. Bounce, shout, bounce, bounce, shout. Laughter, spiked commands and yelps of conquest. Jarring, sudden noises followed by many running feet. Basketball. It had to be basketball. Funny how he could hear the sounds of inside so clearly way out here in the outside. Roger waited patiently, and the nearby game broke up at last, everyone heading home for the night. Sounds of walking and shuffling feet, mixed with voices he recognized, came closer. He should run. He should hide. It was bad enough to be caught behind the gym lockers, in the restrooms, at the park. But this was night. As the boys approached the wall, Roger stood up and turned toward them. He knew his armor would protect him now. They couldn't see him. They couldn't hurt him. They were inside. He was outside. The chorus spoke at once.
Hey, look at there. Fatso's here. Hey, Bebo, it's your piss pants, buddy. Roger Dodger, dumpity-dumpity. Gee, you stink, fat boy.
The biggest boy moved forward and the rest fell in behind him in a V offensive formation.
Hey, Roger Dodger, you jack-off. You pissed on my floor. I'm going to teach you a lesson and wipe that goofy grin off your fat little pizza face.
He opened his mouth and laughed as he reached for Roger's shirt collar. The sword flashed in the streetlight, a blur of motion, a sweep across the big boy's field of view, and his front teeth were driven through the roof of his mouth and into his nasal cavity. He irked and fell to his knees. The V formation broke at once, scattered in all directions and vaporized into the darkness. The big boy was clutching his shattered mouth with one hand and holding the other up in front of him in a vain attempt to protect himself from an empty sidewalk. Roger was behind him. The sword flashed again. The boy's collarbone exploded under his football jersey. He remained on his knees, blindly waving his free hand about. The sword flashed again. The vertebrae in the middle of his back were crushed and propelled forward into his lungs. The big boy crumpled to the sidewalk, and the only sounds in the night were his bubbling gurgle and the muted thuds of sword meeting opponent. Now severed just below the skull, the boy's spine ceased nervous function, and he rolled limply under each blow in the spreading pool of his own blood. Roger's sword flashed again and again and again and again. The neighbors, not the other boys, called the police. The sharp metallic sound of the aluminum baseball bat hitting the wet sidewalk carried into every window up and down the block. When the police arrived, Roger was still circling and methodically hitting the carcass on the school sidewalk. He couldn't stop, wouldn't stop. It was so appropriate and so deserved. Judge and jury, Roger reached a long arm back into the world and served up vengeance from the outside. His actions gave his life meaning and purpose for the first time ever since drawing breath. As the officers approached, Roger pointed the bat into the air.
"The sword of the Lord don't mean nothing to me. I've come in, Ma. Look at me, Ma. I'm in."
The officers gagged as they pushed the stinking, filthy, blood-spattered little fat boy into the back seat of the squad car. He continued to rant and swing his arms as much as the restraints would allow.
"The sword and the light. I am the sword. I am the light. I'm inside. I'm outside. I'm inside. I'm outside. Look, Ma, I'm inside the outside."
The siren wailed, and the car pulled away from the repulsive scene as the child's falsetto voice trailed off, leaving the sound of crickets and the coroner's camera alone in the night. The sword continued to flash on for 26 years. Imprisoned tranquility, Thorazine and Librium, and a great deal of time and therapy helped it to stop. Mission fulfilled, the sword was retired at long last. He gazed out of the barred windows for hours and wondered who all the people out there were. What were they doing? Who were they hurting? Now and then, between lucidity and catatonia, Roger would rest his wrinkled elbows on the windowsill and wonder if she was still as fat as he. There was hope yet. He still liked her.